Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Isaac, and this is the intro to the intro, which means that this is something special. It's special in the sense that we are replaying this episode we recorded back in 2020 with Professor Diana Pasulka, because we are going to interview her now on her new book, Encounters, on this very show. So I'd like for you to refresh your memory on what we talked about in 2020, or maybe you've never heard this episode. We're talking about her book, American Cosmic. I'm going to tell you all about it here soon, because the intro to the actual show, I give you all the details about what we're going to talk about, because I want to lay a good foundation, right? It's kind of long. It's like 10 minutes, right? Also, I removed the, I used to do Patreon shout outs. I removed that section too as well. So anyway, it's going to be, you know, eight or nine, 10 minute intro. So I'm going to cut this short. But stay subscribed to the show, because you're going to want to check out our next discussion about her book, her second book, Encounters. But again, this book that we're talking about on this episode from 2020 is going to be American Cosmic, all right? But it kind of is necessary to understand what's going on in American Cosmic to understand what's going on in Encounters, okay? All right, stay woke.
Unlearn what you know about religion, because the people, like, let's put it, the Invisible College, or what I now call the Fight Club, where these people get together and they, you know, in my book, you have a good example of these people. You have Tyler, okay, works for our government. James works for a top five research university, okay? They don't consider it a religion. In fact, they were angry at me for calling it that. They said, these things exist and we contact them. We're in contact with them. I've experienced them. Stephen King has some great producer directors, and one of them is Josh Boone. And Josh Boone has just finished producing and directing The Stand. He's a director. And so he's fascinated with Stephen. Well, first, Stephen King and he are good friends, but he's fascinated by Stephen King's writing, which I am too. You know, Stephen King has this really great passage that, you know, writing is telepathy, right? And so, and then, so he says that Stephen King gets into this kind of state of almost like Tyler's state. In fact, he liked my book a lot. Josh liked my book and said that, he said that he thought, he saw huge correlations between Tyler's connecting, you know, and Stephen King's writing. He says Stephen King doesn't, you know, probably is not aware of it or believe it or anything like that, but that he says he definitely believes that he does that. First of all, a lot of things he told me were quite ominous. And in fact, you know, he also would tell me, be careful, Diana, there are some nasty, nasty people, you know, and which for him, you know, he's such a person who carries himself so well. And he's such a gentleman, right? So when he says there are nasty people, you better believe that they're nasty.
Today we're joined by the very special guest, Dr. Diana Pasulka. You know her, you love her. She wrote the book American Cosmic. Oh, you haven't read American Cosmic yet? Well, I'm here to tell you, you better go do it. You better go do it. We'll have a conversation today with her, and you don't have to have read the book to hear the conversation, but it'll help fill in a lot of the gaps. I tried to sort of carve the argument such that you could listen to the show without having read the book. And you're going to hear about the book in a few minutes. Well, you know, here's what we do. We get into this conversation, right? And we hear, and because the book is about this sort of secret society of alien believers that she is intermingling with. That's what the book's about, and it connects all the points of all the conspiracies we've ever talked about: transhumanism, aliens, UFOs, Silicon Valley, demons. Yes, demons. There's a spiritual element to this, my friends. This might be one of the most, if not the most important show I've ever done. Definitely one of the best interviews I've ever done, not as far as like me, but as far as the subjects of the interview. I'm a huge fan of Dr. Pasulka. I've been singing her praises since I read this book. I grabbed it a couple weeks after it dropped. She was on a lot of shows. She's been on Coast to Coast. She's been on Higher Side Chats. She has graced us with her appearance. And we talk about this UFO fight club. We talk about Christianity a little bit. We talk about disclosure. If you want to know anything about disclosure, this is the show for you. We'll get into her American Cosmic 2 book. We got news. She's writing another book. And guess what it's about? John Dee. That's right. The Language of the Angels. We talk about that. Talk about Babylon and the Babylon workings and Aleister Crowley stuff. Of course, why not? We get into the sacred place. In the book, she goes, and I'm not making this up. In this book, they basically blindfold her and take her out to the deserts of New Mexico to find UFO pieces. And she talks about it, and she'll blow your mind with this story. You won't believe what she tells you, what she finds out there. We have a little discussion about it. And here's a hint. The hint is I think they're doing sacrifices of humans out there. I mean, hey, you know, it's a kind of a bombshell. I don't know. That's just me filling it in. I don't know if that's what's happening. You'll listen to the part. You'll understand. We talk a little bit about Stephen King and the Turtles. Don't know what we're talking about? Well, hang in there. You'll hear it. The simulation theory, Jacques Vallée. She's buddies with Jacques Vallée. This is a big shot. She's Hollywood for sure. ARPANET, remote viewing stuff, media. We talk about Jacques Vallée's warning. What did Jacques Vallée warn her of? He said, trust no one. Why did he say that? We're going to find out. We talk about Project Bluebeam. I ask Professor of Religious Studies, Dr. Diana Pasolka, I ask her, do you think Project Bluebeam is possible? Is it real that we're going to be manipulated with alien, fake alien invasions? We talk about it. The New York Times ain't asking her about Project Bluebeam. And she was kind enough to share her thoughts on that. Yes, indeed. You got to stick around. Towards the end, it gets wild. We talk about the Collins Elite. If you don't know who that is, it's like this idea of a secret society of Christians tied into the ABCs and the Pentagon. And supposedly, you know, Luis Elizondo was talking about how they shut down all these UFO programs because they were channeling demons. So we talk a little bit about, you know, Collins Elite, Ray Boucher. It's nuts. We talk about demons and angels. I mean, it's all in here. This is everything. This is the culmination of everything. As you know, I'm writing my book on alien life forms, or whatever you want to call these entities. I'm writing two books, Use Your Illusion 1 and Use Your Illusion 2. And Use Your Illusion 1, I'm done with it. I'm just doctoring up a few sort of crazy elements in there, but I wanted to talk to Dr. Pasolka about this. I could die a happy man. I got to pick her brain with all the things, and now I've got my own confirmation bias now. I feel like I'm right. I feel like I'm right. And you're going to read about it when I drop that book. Anyways, I'm rambling on long enough. I'm so excited. This is easily my favorite. Easily my favorite show. She's my number one guest. You're going to hear me gush about it at the beginning here. And I really enjoyed this episode more than any. Please listen to this show. Share it with your friends. This is a big one. This is everything, especially if you believe the UFO disclosure is coming. You got to hear this show. Also, one more thing. I left in a little bit of the pre-book discussion on here because I think it's very interesting information. We talk about some patches and how they embed symbolism on them. We talk a little bit about some of the ideas that are supported in the book. I added it in there. I didn't take it out because I think it's actually pretty good information. You're kind of picking up mid-conversation here. But we do sort of gradually get into the book. And when we talk about people like Tyler, that's the name of one of her contacts in her book. And Tyler is a pseudonym because he is a secret, anonymous secret man of mystery. And he is in this book. And so when we talk about Tyler, that's who we're talking about. So, you know, we didn't start off on the traditional path of prepping the audience for the conversation because things just went real smooth, real organic right off the bat. So you're going to pick up mid-conversation, but we will sort of maybe 10 minutes into the conversation, we'll kind of talk about what this book is and what this project is and all that. So, you know, hang in there for a little bit. We'll if you're confused on who these people are, what we're talking about, just hang in there and it'll be real nice. I'll hit you on the other side. Let's go.
Yeah, so I got this one on purpose because so the NRO sends up classified satellites. They send up classified satellites. And if you're on one of those missions to do that, you get these patches, right?
Okay.
So when you're doing mission work for NASA or for any of the space agencies, you get these patches. And in my book, Tyler has like 100 of them or more. And so, so these patches are interesting. I have some. This one is one that relates to off-planet things, right? And so you can see what it says.
Which could be man-made satellites, I imagine,
yeah,
right?
It could be anything, yeah. And so you see that. What's really interesting is that part of the reason why I called this the Fight Club, right, in reference to that movie Fight Club, was because people don't talk about what they like. You can be working with this person maybe 10 years or maybe your whole career and not know what he or she does. Okay, so they exist in this super compartmentalized system and infrastructure. And so they had these patches. Well, I happen to be a professor of religion who understands religious symbolism. So I started to look at his patches, Tyler's patches, and I began to like read them. And I would tell them what he meant, and he had no idea.
Oh, really?
He had no idea. He would just get these patches, and he liked them. So he had a big box of them. And sometimes he'd talk to my classes, my students, and he'd bring the patches in. And, you know, and I would read them. So we would just have this really fun time doing that. Of course, can't do that now after the book is out. But I was going to tell you. So this is one of these patches that signifies a lot of things. So you see on here, you know, a certain configuration of the moon and also a question, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically says, don't ask, right?
Hmm.
And then down here it says NOYFB, and that's an acronym for none of your
okay.
Yeah. So they did this. They were really playful at first until people started to get good reading the patches. So one of the things that they have in a lot of their patches, they use Roman gods and goddesses a lot, and they also use first century Latin, and Latin changes, and the way that you know that it's first century Latin, first of all, you'd have to be a person who knows that, right? And then once you read the Latin, you have to understand it in its context. It's not Roman Catholic Latin from the 4th century onward. This is first century Latin, and it's Roman. And so what they're doing is they're suggesting, you know, they're in a sense connoting the Roman Empire, okay? And a lot of the patches and the sayings that were in Latin were very directed toward don't mess with us kind of thing, you know?
Okay.
And these would be – I wish I had more patches to show you. And I have a book filled with the patches too. But if you just, you know, go online and there are a lot of – when a patch comes out, there are people who follow the patches and try to decode them and that kind of thing. And you can get a lot of information about what that mission is about by looking at the patches, actually. So I would read the patches, and that would actually help Tyler understand what the heck the whole thing was about, because he was compartmentalized too. He was in the dark as well. So
wait a second. So Tyler, who I believe in the book, you say Tyler D, which is Tyler Durden, right?
Yeah.
So Tyler reveals that, so like, are people sitting in an office with Tyler and all the people sitting around him, like maybe they're all working on one project together, but they don't know that Tyler works also on some other secret project? Is that kind of how compartmentalized it is? Or is he with a whole team of people, all of them are in on this secret project,
and you know they're in a larger organization that none of them realize that they're doing secret sort of stuff.
Both.
Okay.
So there are different configurations of it. And a lot of times people are in programs that are called front programs that aren't even about something, right? But they're programs to distract us from seeing what might be actually a program. The programs are super, I don't know a lot about them.
Okay.
But I just know that they exist.
Okay.
And a lot of them have to do with space and national security, which I wouldn't want to talk about because I'm a patriot, right? And I don't want to compromise our country's security or anything like that. And plus, if I did know something, I wouldn't even know that I knew it. So even if I say something, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and I get that. I get that attitude because a lot of people in the truther community are very much like, well, we need to know all the secrets. And I understand and I get that we can't have all the secrets. Like, some of them are national security. So, like, I sympathize with both viewpoints.
Yes.
Because I'm like, we should know if aliens exist. I think they should share that with us. But, like, I also get that they can't share everything. So, it's this weird dance, you know.
That's where my book comes in. Okay, so Ezra, I just talked to Ezra Klein on his podcast, and he asked the same question, like, why the secrets? You know, why shouldn't we have the right to know? And I said, well, you know, Eric Davis is a physicist who studies things, you know, within space. And he basically says that things flying around in our airspace that we are not aware of is not something, you know, this is the military thing. You know, when it's a military thing about our protection, we're not beating on the door to know secrets about like other things, you know. Why are we beating on the door to know about secrets about aliens? Well, of course we want to know. Everybody wants to know. But my suggestion is that we already know. And we already know because we have every single one of us alive today, I would believe. Maybe there are people older than 100 who aren't like us. But everyone alive today has been in some way inundated with images and stories about UFOs and aliens. Therefore, we've been primed to know, okay? And what I do in the good portion of my book, which is that middle portion, which a lot of people, it's like either people love the middle portion or they hate it. And then there are the two bookends of the book where I talked about the actual people, right? And a lot of people just love that part. And so that middle portion, though, is cognitive science of media. And basically what I'm doing is I'm not a cognitive scientist, so I use the work of other cognitive scientists, some at Stanford, some at University of Washington, okay? And or Washington U, I guess, is what it's called. And so what they're doing – And a lot of people in LA and Silicon Valley are doing this too. In fact, there is this whole genre, a bunch of new genres are popping up about media, like cognitive consumerism, like how to get people to buy stuff when they're not aware that they actually don't want it, right? How do we do this? Okay, so a lot of the images and the media that we are engaged with actually makes us believe things that we don't know that we believe. So there are already mechanisms within us, like, you know, here's a good example. Okay, a lemon. Okay, when people talk about lemons, a lot of times most people have a reaction in their mouth, right? They're like, oh, you know, that my mouth is puckering up because lemons are really tart, right? But I don't actually have a lemon. You're not eating a lemon, but your body is physiologically reacting to this lemon, okay? This lemon that's not even here. Well, that's how media works. You know, you go and you watch a movie and in the executive part of your brain here, you don't believe it, but other part, you know, we're just not living on this, you know, this level. Other parts of our brains are activated and believe. So in some sense, I think, in fact, I asked Brother Guy Consolmagno, he's the director of the Vatican Observatory. He was actually talking to my students, I'd say it was about 4 years ago. And one of the students said, you know, what would happen if there was disclosure? What would happen if all of a sudden the government said, or one of the governments, because some governments, I guess, have said so already, you know, yeah, well, you don't know what these are. He said, what are you talking about? He said, everybody already knows. You know, and we don't, you know, it wouldn't be big news. So I thought that was really good. And in fact, it was such a great teaching moment for me, because then the next week, he talked that 1 week, and everybody loved it, right? The next week, the chief scientist of NASA, who is, I don't know if she still is the chief scientist, it was Ellen Stofan. Okay, so she gets on all this media, and she basically says, we're going to find extraterrestrial life. It's going to be within 10 years. We have we have the instruments, we have the technology to do this, blah, blah, blah. And then she was saying, then she said, but we're not talking about little green men. You know, we're talking about like microbes or, you know, things like that. And so, but none of the media quoted that part. They left that part out. So I thought it was a really great teaching moment for my students to see how media takes what a person will say, or even what a person has experienced, completely shift it around so that it reinforces our belief. And so, you know, all my students were like, wow, we really do believe. And I have a lot of boring academic articles, you know, that talk about the mechanisms for that. So there are certain mechanisms that people use that are in media to do that. And I honestly think that our government uses them too. You know, if you look at Cambridge Analytica, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, these mechanisms are, they weren't developed by researchers at, say, my university, or, you know, even Harvard, or maybe Harvard, actually, now that I think about it. But they were developed and used, like ARPANET, right? The proto-internet. It was military before we got it. So we always get kind of like the secondhand technologies that have been already, that, you know, have already been used or are being used. And so, you know, who knows what is happening now. We'll know in 20 years, I guess.
Yeah, that's what they always say. They say that these sort of DARPA-type organizations are always 20 to 30 years ahead with technology. And I've heard several first or secondhand experiences in technology that people have seen with their own eyes that didn't jive with what we know exist. You know, Bob Lazar is a perfect example of someone who saw something that he's not sure if he was supposed to see it, or if they were using him as a way to sort of get messages out to the public. And because he was kind of like, look, I was just like the science guy, and they brought me in and I saw these UFOs and it seemed kind of weird to me too. And I've heard that, yes. I've heard that story from many people that they were witness to something that they were like, I don't know why I was there. Like, it didn't make any sense.
Yes. Yeah. That was a constant question for me. It's always a question for me now. When somebody tells me something, I'm like, are they psyoping me now or something?
Yeah,
you know?
It's really bizarre.
I know. Yeah.
And I don't think we can talk about the aliens or the UFO phenomenon without, you know, the intel agencies and the military's like technology kind of stuff. Because you're, and tell me if I'm wrong in paraphrasing your book. And, you know, because like you said, like, I'm also guilty of being influenced by media. In fact, I've used that quote from the chief scientist of NASA in my book, talking about, she said we find life with it by 2025. And my whole shtick, you know, and I wrote that book back in 2017. My whole shtick has been like, they're going to roll out a disclosure. I question what the motivation is for that, and if it's really authentically life in another planet. Or, I don't know, my research goes into weird, wacky occult religion stuff of like, look, there's been these occultists channeling aliens and entities for hundreds of years through ritual magic. Whether you want to believe that or not, that's what they said they're doing. And I don't see how this is any different.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I agree with you entirely.
Yeah. Because like, you look at, you know, Jack Parsons is the archetype of this whole thing. It's this guy who was intrigued by science fiction novels of going to space. He wanted nothing less than destroying Christianity down to the studs. And he wants the new religion to be based on Aleister Crowley and ritual magic and contacting Lamb through Alamantra workings and all this crazy stuff. And I realized, and that's a hard sell when you try to talk to people. Like, there's so many things they have to know. Like, people are like, Aleister who? What are you talking about, dude?
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah. And so like your book, and, oh yeah, my question, because I'm using a variety of sources in writing my book, and yours is the most informative of all the sources. And what basically, so I want to ask you one-on-one, if I'm paraphrasing your book correctly, to see if I'm being biased or influenced or reading into it something that's not true. Tell me if I'm off base, but your book is basically a couple things. You've got this experience with essentially some kind of form of a secret society of people who believe in aliens or extraterrestrial life or whatever you want to call this, the phenomenon, to the point that they want to start a new religion based upon this. Some of these characters include people in government positions, Hollywood, Silicon Valley. They use various aliases, but you've also got these big hitters like Jacques Vallée that you were hanging out with. And I suspect that these people with the aliases might even be household kind of names. And then you also have this component of how mental cognitive models work, like through Jeffrey Zaks' stuff, which I read after reading your book. I read his stuff, and I was like, dude, this is exactly what we've been talking about in the conspiracy world with predictive programming.
Exactly.
So am I sort of on the right track of when I talk, because I talk about your book all the time to people. So like, is that an accurate portrayal of that?
Yes, it's not. Okay. So when you talk to people about religion, and, you know, we have really an ethnocentric idea of religion, right? We always think of religion, you've got to have a god, and you've got to have, you know, but, you know, in a sense, Westerners made up the term religion. And if you look at indigenous populations, religion is something they don't even talk about. It's just part of what they do. There are spirits for them, right? And there are entities. And, you know, some of them believe that they descended from star people and things like that. Well, for them, that's not religion. Okay. So my point to us in the West is we need to unlearn what we've learned about religion, because it's not correct. And we have to understand religion is something that's first culturally specific, usually. Okay. So that if you go to Japan, you know, and you go to a Shinto temple or something, you know, there are going to be local gods and goddesses that they do some type of homage to. And they might even consider themselves atheists, but they believe that there are these spirit entities, but there's no big god, right? Okay. So that our Western conception of religion, that's the first thing I have to do when I teach about this, is just bring our minds to this idea that unlearn what you know about religion, because the people like, let's put it, the Invisible College, or what I now call the Fight Club, where these people get together and they, you know, in my book, you have a good example of these people. You have Tyler, okay, works for our government. James works for a top five research university, okay? They don't consider it a religion. In fact, they were angry at me for calling it that. They said, these things exist. And we contact them. We're in contact with them. I've experienced them. So you would never tell a person that their religion was made up, you know, because you are going to offend them. And so I said, listen, I had to convince them that I could do this, you know. And they said, as long as you tell people, and I gave them their chapters so they could take out stuff that they didn't like, right? And so, because I, you know, that's just, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't say, hey, be in my book, and then make a person look like they don't feel like that's how their truth, you know, that's not their truth. So yes, that is a good paraphrase of my book. And these people have been around for a long time, thousands of years. You've had people, I'm writing my second book now. I'm going to be talking about John Dee, who also, you know, John Dee. Okay, good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So you know, it's funny. I've got a 007 tattoo, and I didn't know. I got it done when I was really young, and I didn't, you know, obviously I didn't know who John Dee was, and like now I researched, like you talked about earlier before we started recording, about how my name is Weishaupt might have came to me. That's really bizarre, because I like James Bond, but I'm not like this mega James Bond fan. I just thought it was a cool logo, and now I do all this research on the occult, and I'm like, John Dee's 007, you know.
Whoa, that's really interesting.
Yeah. But anyways, I don't want to interrupt you, but John Dee, that's an interesting person.
Yeah, yeah. So John Dee is fascinating because, you know, he's the one, he writes these volumes with this guy who thinks they're channeling angels, Enochian angels, okay? So they write these volumes called The Language of Angels, basically is what it's called. And so, and then what he's a very smart and elite man who knows the queen. And so he's able to then tell her about a form of, I would call it almost like human evolution that he wants to put into place through the language of these angels. Okay, well, who does that sound like? That sounds like Jack Parsons, okay? Did Jack Parsons know about John Dee? So early on, I talked to Tyler about Jack Parsons because I thought, Tyler's like Jack Parsons, right? So he does all these weird things. And so I asked him if he knew who Jack Parsons was. No. And I said, how could you not know about Jack Parsons when JPL, you know, it's all there. And then it was like a big light for him, like, you know, like, whoa. So that's how Fight Club-ish it is. So back when Jacques Vallée, who's my mentor, by the way, back when Jacques Vallée was doing the Invisible College stuff with, you know, Hynek and people like that, he was basically, they were talking to each other, okay? And the way it's gone is that there's a next generation of people who study the phenomena, and they're not talking to each other. And if they are talking to each other, it's only about this one spot. You know, I'm only going to talk to you about this. This is what my little thing is, and this is what I need. It's a need to know kind of thing. I need to know this from you. This is what I need to tell you. And it's almost like there's a whole group of them working together, but they're not communicating in the way that you and I would think that you need to communicate. Like basically that first part of my book where I talk about the conference and everybody gets in a big fight. Like there's the people like me, the religious studies people, and there are the scientists and some of whom work in the three-letter agencies and such, and they can't say anything really. And we're like, what are you talking about? It's knowledge. It should be transparent. And they laugh at us, and some of them are angry. And then two of them get in a big fight, and none of the humanists know what they're fighting about. But I know because I've figured it out, you know, that, oh, yeah, I got it. We're idiots, you know, like professors, you know, really not smart sometimes. So we're working with these scientists, not even understanding that their culture is a culture of silence and our culture is not. So I have a huge footnote section in my book. They're not going to have footnotes. They're not going to tell you where the stuff is or what the stuff is or what they see or what they study. So that's the first thing I had to make clear to the audience, was that I'm going into a different world and it's not the world that I'm used to, but I'm going to open up my mind and try to understand it. And so that's how it starts.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And I'll concur with you on that. I was an engineer for a period of time and I no longer do that. I do more of a sort of program manager role. But as an engineer, it was very segmented and, like, you know, they notoriously aren't good at communication.
And no, I knew that.
And I had one of my professors tell me in college, like, you're not an engineer. Like the way I acted and talked, it was kind
you're articulate. You can talk. Yeah.
It's kind of a compliment, you know, and not to say there's anything wrong with engineers, but, you know. So I get where you're coming from with that.
I think we all know.
So and I do want to add in, as I told you, I was writing this alien book, and in the book, I talk about, obviously, Jack Parsons, and I talk about the Babylon working ritual he did with L. Ron Hubbard, which most of the audience is familiar with, where they basically were trying to channel entities from another dimension, and Crowley infamously said they never closed the portal, and then we got Roswell. Anyway, what's curious is that in the research, I found that, you know, Babylon is spelled B-A-B-A-L-O-N, and maybe you know this already, but the Aleister Crowley, he spelled it as such for the gematria equivalent of 156, which was 12 by 13, which was the dimensions of the Enochian table that John Dee and Edward Kelly have this, you know, Enochian language built from. So there's all these sort of weird connections with the Enochian language. And I find it curious that you're now going to go into it a little bit as your next book.
Wow, I didn't know that. Thanks for telling me.
Yeah, and I didn't know that either till I was like kind of real deep into this weird esoteric research. And because I always wondered that too. I had read that the Babylon was spelled that way because it meant harlot in the Enochian language. But also found that Crowley 12x13 reference.
That's really interesting. Thanks.
Yeah, yeah. And it's curious. You said Tyler didn't even know who Jack Parsons was? Is that right?
That's correct. Isn't that sad? Yeah.
That is bizarre.
So, you know, at the very beginning of the research, what I did, this is usually what you do when you start a book, is you start from the beginning. And I said, okay, I need to go research our space program and the Russian space program. Because before, you know, we had China here, we were the only viable space programs, right? And I thought, okay, you know, it'd be awesome. They started at the same time. It'd be awesome to go back and look. Usually, if you have the credentials, you can go to a place like the Air Force Library or like, you know, the Vatican Library or something like that. And if you're doing research, you have access. And so I asked for access to the Air Force Library in Los Angeles, and I was given, they said yes, okay. And then Tyler said, oh, I can get you some really great access, you know, to some stuff. And so he goes, we just need to look you up or whatever. And I was like, okay. So they did. And I had written one paper that had in the title UFO, just one. And after that, I didn't get any access at all.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See, and that's
where all the stuff would be on Jack Parsons and stuff like that. You know, they have the original, all that stuff. But they don't talk about it. And so after Tyler learned about Jack Parsons, he actually went to some of his colleagues and he asked them about it. And they're like, that's all a bunch of baloney kind of thing.
Wow, that is a trip.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so another question I have, I'm watching the clock here. I don't want to take up too much. I could literally talk to you all day. There's a story you relay in the book that to me was one of the most intriguing, and it's about your trip to the sacred place. I don't know if you are, how much, if you can give any more information, or maybe, you know, not all, in case the audience hasn't read your book, maybe you can give us the short version of it if you want.
You mean in chapter one, the donation site?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I can talk about that. Yeah.
Okay.
So, so the book opens with, and I thought it was so odd. I thought if I can get away with this with Oxford University Press, which is, you know, the most, well, you know, in academia, it's the most prestigious press, and they don't want anything that has to do with belief in anything, right? So I'm opening it up with Tyler, who works for the space program, taking my friend, I wasn't going to go alone, taking James, who's this academic, you know, he's a scientist, okay? And he's one of the most well-known scientists in the world. And so I invited him, and I said, I'm not going to go to this place. See, the strange thing is that Tyler was this is why I had the suspicion about Tyler. Throughout the whole book, I had this suspicion, because he wanted to know, to get to know me for a year and a half. And we only kind of discussed stuff on emails and texting and stuff. And I didn't meet him because I knew that he was part of these kinds of organizations. And I really just wanted to write a book about UFOs. And I honestly didn't think how these organizations fit in. And as I came to learn, it's the story. You know, if you don't tell that part of the story, that you're not telling the whole story. And I have friends who've written about UFOs and haven't told that part because they're uncomfortable with it. And it is uncomfortable. So Tyler convinces me. He says, I really want you to see and have this feeling that there's actual, because you think it's just in your head. He goes, and I want to show you that it's not. And so I said, well, I'm not going out there by myself. And he said, well, I only have permission to take you out there. And so I said, well, do you know Jeff Kripal?
Yes, I've heard of him. I don't know him, but yeah.
Yeah. So Jeff is a friend. I've known him for a long time, and he's in religious studies and he teaches at Rice. And I said, Jeff, I said, come on, you have to come with me out to New Mexico, and we're going to go to this alleged UFO crash site. It's not Roswell. And Jeff was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, he's like, I don't know about that, Diana. That's like way out of my comfort zone. And I said, yeah, me too. That's why I wanted you to come. And he's like, well, no. And I was like, gosh, okay. So then I had just met James, and James was on fire to like learn about stuff like this. So I called him and I said, James, I said, look, I know it sounds really weird. And he said, just immediately, he said, I want to go tomorrow. And I was like, okay. So I looked, I told Tyler, I said, I'm not going by myself with you. We're going to take James if I'm going. And he said, no. Okay. And then it took a while, but I knew he'd want James to go because James is a really intelligent scientist who could actually look at stuff if we're going to find stuff. So we're supposed to find artifacts. Okay. And so I'm going completely as an atheist and a person who studies religion.
But you're, sorry, I don't mean to interject. Are you atheist or are you a Christian? Like what's your?
Oh yeah. So, okay. So to call me a Christian is super complicated what I am because when you get a PhD in religion, you know a lot about religion. So and you're like, nah, I don't believe that. So, I'm a practicing Catholic. I practice in the sense that, but there are things that I'm not going to accept or believe, right? Okay. So Catholic, I know Catholicism so well that I can see how it's changed throughout the years and people say it's the universal truth that never changes. Oh, right. You know?
Yeah. I get that sentiment. I understand. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. I just want to make sure because you said you're going as an atheist. You're just saying you're putting a religious thing aside.
Yeah. As an academic. I'm an atheist, right? An atheist because, you know, we don't promote religions, right? We study them. Yeah. So I'm going as an atheist with respect to this is a real UFO crash site. I don't believe that, right? So that's how I'm going. And I tell them that too. James is full on believing, right? Because he knows he met Tyler. I introduced them. Tyler has been there many, many, many times. So he knows, right? And he says it is. And so I'm going there with them and we have to be blindfolded to go there. And so we get blindfolded. Tyler drives us there and we spend 2 days and we find parts. And and then the rest of the story kind of takes on its own thing, narrative, basically. I write as I go because as I go, my mind is blown almost for every chapter. As every chapter comes, I'm like, really? How do I write this? So I have an issue with, you know, being an academic, writing about this, being so included in something that could possibly be true. I become agnostic at the end of the book about it. And so I'm thinking, this is probably true. And I'm not supposed to say that. But I'm going to do it as best I can and say, yeah, you know, there's, you know, heck, nothing like this happened to me when I was a scholar of Catholicism, right? And I'm a full professor. Mm-hmm. So here I've published a bunch of stuff. I've won research awards. I've done this. Nothing like this has ever happened in doing those projects. So I knew that there was – I didn't know what it was, but I knew there was like what I call the truth effect. There was a truth effect.
Wow. Okay. So because when I read that story, right, what I'm thinking is because they had you like blindfolded for a segment of it, right?
Yes.
I'm thinking if they're going to the site to actively retrieve more parts, meaning like they haven't done all the cleanup yet or whatever, that surely this is on some kind of guarded, you know, area of land and they had to have gone through a gate or something. Like, it's not like I got to think that they don't tell Tyler like, oh yeah, just go over to this city here and, you know, drive 2 miles into the desert. You'll find all these pieces. I got to think they've got it secured.
Yeah, there was a gate and there was everything that you said. There was also, this is something that I actually had an issue with that my editor at Oxford. This is a part that she wanted me to take out, and it's this part where I'm at the site, and everywhere as far as I can see, there's like about I think probably 6 inches to a foot of like rusty rubble, and I don't know what it is. So I pick it up and I kind of like feel it with my fingers, and I'm thinking, what is that? And so Tyler said, those are cans. Those are like aluminum cans from I guess, or maybe not, I don't know what, they were cans from like the 50s or whatever. He said when they thought they cleaned it all up, they put all these cans out there. And then they disintegrated over the years into this rubble. And so I put that in the book. And my editor, who's an awesome editor, by the way, she said, Diana, why would you put that in the book? It makes no sense. Why would the government put a bunch of cans out there? And I said, you know, she's a complete non-believer, of course. And I said, I have to keep it in. I said, because it's data. And if I don't keep it in, we won't know the story. I don't know why they did it. You know, Cynthia is her name. I said, I don't know why they did it. But we had a back and forth for like 2 days about that. She goes, it's going to make you look really ridiculous just to put that in. I was like, so be it, you know, I'll be ridiculous. But that's what I saw.
Well, what's you know? Bizarre about that is that I went up to Barker Ranch up in Death Valley where Charles Manson and his, you know, family went up there and were hiding out in the late 60s. And they had rusty aluminum cans with bullet holes in it. You know, as the story goes, they were target shooting up there. And I saw them with my own eyes. And they were nowhere close to disintegrating. And that's in the 60s that those things were out there. So that data does, I don't know, it gets my mind moving on some weird ideas. But the New Mexico thing also like gets my mind going in a lot of directions because, I mean, we've got Roswell, of course, but there's also another site in Aztec, New Mexico that a lot of people refer to as sort of like a second Roswell that supposedly a UFO, you know, skidded to a stop there. And, you know, there's all these weird things with New Mexico. It's where we're doing the nuclear testing and all this stuff.
Yes.
So, like, to see that they call it this, you call it the sacred place in New Mexico, like, it just triggers so many ideas in my head with what's going on out there and well, where could this be?
It is strange. I was told there were several of the crashes in the 40s, in like between 45 and 50, I guess. So, you know, although at the time I did not, I mean, I was like, okay, you know, I'm just being told these things. And then what I call it the sacred site because they're treating it as sacred. When we go out there, we prayed, right?
Wow. And who are they praying to?
I don't know. Oh, they were just praying. So I went
just
along
kind of
with
a general prayer.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also so every time Tyler goes out there, he puts like you know, ancient altars that are made of stone, and you see them, and they're kind of there are a bunch of these altars out there, some by him, some by these other people,
big giant ones.
It's just their sacred place. Yeah, so I called it that, the sacred place.
So they got like big giant Stonehenge. They got like big like Stonehenge like that size.
No, not that big, but they do have big, like, stone altars out there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, that's wild. And
each time they go out there, or at least this is what Tyler said, they do. He does, and he said there were other people who did too. And so I wasn't supposed to take pictures of those, and I did not. We had to give up our phones. We had to basically I think I say this in the book too, because it was really funny. Because once we get out there and I take off, you know, my blindfold and I look around, the place looked really familiar to me. And I was like, this looks really familiar. And I look over and I see this kind of mesa type thing. And Tyler's watching me to see what I'm looking at. He says, does it look familiar? And I said, yes, it looks familiar, but you know, I haven't been out here. And he said, this is the scene from that last episode of the X-Files. And I was like, what? And at that point, I thought I was in Looney Town, right? I'm like, my brain was just exploding at that point. And I'm thinking, this guy's crazy. But then it made a lot of sense to me because I'm writing a book about belief in UFOs, right? And the X-Files is one of the best programs that could bring it all together, you know, and make us really believe in UFOs. And in fact, National Geographic, they were going to run this thing on UFOs, and they did a survey of what Americans believe UFOs would be like, you know, if there was disclosure, it would be like the X-Files. It would be, you know, kind of the secrecy and Fox Mulder, you know, these agents and everything like that, which I thought was weird. So that's kind of when that site became, for me, a focal point of my book, because I thought, this is it. This includes everything: religion, weird stuff, you know, like rituals, altars, and media. It's all there.
Yeah, there's, and I was going to save this question for later, but I feel like now's a better time to bring it up. Towards the end, you're talking, I got your passage here. I'm trying to paraphrase, so I'm not just directly reading your book. There's a passage, and it says, I'll just read it. Tyler told me an anecdote that demonstrates the artifact's sacred significance to him and to many of the scientist believers. Tyler had put the part in a backpack and had then stopped in to see a friend. He and his friend visited and dined, and then Tyler left to continue his travels. The next day, he received a message from his friend. I had a dream about the contents of your backpack. I dreamt that there was a separate universe that you carried in it, a universe that was created within this universe, that who knows where this universe was created, had very much the essence of Turtles all the way down. And the reason I want to read that passage, and we casually sort of glossed over this on email, but like when I read that, I couldn't help but think of Stephen King. I couldn't help but think of his book It, which I had read a couple times, which is a massive book, but the films I love. I just love the story so much. I don't know why. But he talks about this matter in this, who's the adversary turtle. And the adversary, of course, brings up all these ideas of the other and Lucifer and all this other stuff. But Matterin is this turtle that vomits up the whole universe during this ritual of Chud sequence, which the films don't really go into. I mean, it's only in the book.
Right.
I wanted to ask you about that turtle idea. And, you know, it's not elaborated on in the book much. You think there's a connection to be had there? I mean, is there anything to that?
Yeah, well, that's really funny because I remember that email that you sent. And I was like, first off, a lot of people, that passage to me is super important, you know, and I didn't put it in there lightly because I honestly believe that this is where we get into kind of really weird science, right? And so you've got this material thing that somehow, in my mind, how did his friend know that there was something really weird in his backpack, right? That's the first question.
Yeah.
And then not only that, but it had to do with universes. And like universes all the way down, which suggests dimensions of universes. Again, what was weird about it, and this is where we get into that part in my book where we talk about synchronicity, because your email was a synchronicity, because I'm very good friends with Stephen King has some great producer directors, and one of them is Josh Boone. And Josh Boone has just finished producing and directing The Stand. He's a director. And so he's fascinated with Stephen. Well, first, Stephen King and he are good friends, but he's fascinated by Stephen King's writing, which I am too. You know, Stephen King has this really great passage that, you know, writing is telepathy, right? And so, he says that Stephen King gets into this kind of state of almost like Tyler's state. In fact, he liked my book a lot. Josh liked my book and said that he saw huge correlations between Tyler's connecting, you know, and Stephen King's writing. He says Stephen King doesn't, you know, probably is not aware of it or believe it or anything like that, but that he says he definitely believes that he does that. So that was weird that first we had that synchronicity of, you know, Stephen King doing, you know, saying turtles, and then this turtles all the way down. But what do I think of the, I think that, oh, see, again, Josh is now doing work with Whitley Strieber, okay? So he wants to, I think he's doing communion, I could be wrong, but he works with Whitley. And what's strange, and I think it may have been taken out of the book, but there was a passage I did put at the very beginning of the book where Tyler and I are were at a really nice restaurant outside, and there's the Pacific Ocean, and it's nighttime, and it's really beautiful. The stars are huge. You know, the stars in California, the ocean, are beautiful. And we're talking about the parts, right? But we're talking alone, and all of a sudden, Whitley Strieber comes out of the restaurant, and he walks directly up to us, and he says, "You know those parts you're talking about?" And both of us just like went, you know, these kinds of things happen during the course of writing my book. And so then Tyler said, yes. He said, "You think you're studying those parts, but they're actually studying you."
Whoa.
I know, that's what I did. So if, for the, your audience, Adam, Isaac just went, "Oh."
That's this,
like his head blown.
Your whole book just, it blows my mind. I've never read anything like this book, and to hear these stories is like, I don't know. I don't even know how to process all this. Because it's like, yeah, it's triggering all these things I've kind of read about over the years. And I want to ask you about the synchronicity stuff, because there's an idea presented in the book. And I don't know how much you could elaborate on, because it's pretty heavy. I mean, it's pretty complex. But Jacques Vallée is talking about space-time connections, and this idea of associative computing, right? And he says, an example given is like an advertisement on a computer for tires after a conversation about tires, you know, and everyone experiences this on their phone with like ads, yeah, that pop up. They're like, "Well, I was just talking about that. Is my phone listening to me?" You know?
Yeah.
And Vallée sort of talks about space-time being a construct, and I wanted to get your take on, because to me, when I read what Vallée was saying, and then I watched a TED talk of his, it's almost like he's supporting the idea of like a simulation theory.
Yeah. And yeah, I can say, yeah, I can definitely speak to that.
Okay.
And I can give a cool anecdote too.
All right. I like cool anecdotes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so this was after the book was published. Okay. So there was another one of these small conferences, and, it was at Esalen, and which is on the Pacific Ocean, really beautiful. And Jacques was there, and he was going to do the title of his talk was Synchronicity and the Simulation and the Simulated Universe. Okay, and he was going to link these two. I was going, and I was you know, a lot of times we do stuff for our graduate students. So I had a graduate student whose name was Alex. And so I wanted Alex to go because he was going to go to graduate school directly after that. And I wanted him to kind of see what you could do in religious studies. And he got a full scholarship to go to a graduate program. So he was already set. So I thought this would be a good experience for him. So this is how I know about it. And I also have a friend who I've not met. You know how you can have virtual friends? So I have a friend named Rizwan Virk. Or do you know him, Rizwan? He's no. done the, it's called the Simulation Hypothesis. And he's an MIT Silicon Valley guy who knows Jacques and people like that. So Jacques was basically using a lot of Rizwan's work to talk about the simulated universe, but his addition was synchronicity. And I was dying to see that, you know, I couldn't wait, but my daughter was sick, so I couldn't go. So I said to Alex, I was actually co-organizing the conference. And so I said to Alex, "Please pay attention to everything so you can tell me what happens, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff that will happen." And so this is what Alex told me. And Rizwan told me this too. And it was really funny. And a couple people told me this. They said that Jacques was giving this talk about, and he was using a lot of stuff from the Matrix. Okay, so Neo and, you know, the Matrix and stuff like that. And so basically, he was giving this talk about the simulated universe and synchronicity and blowing people away. So everybody was like really blown away by it. And then when it was done, they broke to go to lunch. And as they went to lunch, they passed Lawrence Fishburne, who plays Morpheus, of course.
At Esalen?
They were, yeah, at Esalen, okay. Yeah. so that he was going to lunch too, right? And so they were like freaked out, of course, because of this bizarre synchronicity that was happening just after they learned about the simulated universe and synchronicity. The thing about Jacques is I've been studying his stuff for so long, and I've he's been super kind to me. So he's shown me things to read, and he's given me access to his library. So he's got this library that's got a lock on it. I think now for it, I think it was like a 10-year lock, and now we're in the third year. But James and I can see it. So we can see it. And anyone I take that I think should see it, like Alex, like a grad student, can see it too. And it's at Rice University. And there's a big archive. It's called the Archive of the Impossible. And Jeff Kripal put it together. So he's got all of these libraries from famous ufologists and stuff. But Jacques has all this stuff that I've seen. And also I went back as, you know, a researcher and went to some of his first publications, which, by the way, I had to dig up in, you know, our microfiche in my library and stuff like that, you know, that nobody uses those anymore. And so, and then I had to read it and everything. And I asked him, I said, "Do you have this?" And he had it. And he said, "Here, just have," he had a nice pristine version of it. And it was basically what they were doing with the ARPANET, which was called, Jeff calls it the augmentation of the intellect, right? Is that they were actually, in a sense, kind, and I say kind of, when I say kind of, it's not that I'm being a Californian, it's that I'm saying that I don't know exactly if they were doing this, but from what they were saying, I think they were, that they were using, and from reading Jacques' old papers, if any of your audience would like to read a lot of his old papers, he has an academia.edu website, and you can just go there and download his papers. He was basically doing psi work with the internet and doing, you know, precognition, remote viewing, that kind of thing with the internet. But it was the proto-internet, so it wasn't what we know about the internet now. So, you know, it was a really, I don't know what you call it, like primitive sort of thing. So Jacques noticed, being one of the first information scientists from Northwestern with, you know, a PhD and also an astronomer, okay, just a genius, right? One of the smartest people I know. So what he found was that, you know, he pays attention to a lot of things. I think a lot of intelligence is just being aware of stuff, you know, just like looking at your surroundings and being aware. And so he was aware that synchronicities were ramped up with internet stuff, with, you know, digital media. And so he wrote some papers about that, some of the early papers on that for the, you know, he also worked with the SRI and Institute. And so so what I did in my book was then I took it further and I talked about the what I call the synthetic synchronicity, you know, when you're a lot of times, sometimes you don't even have to, you know, a lot of this is done for us now. So we engage with media and we're being watched as we watch, right? We're consumed. We think we consume media, but it's actually, it's consuming us. We're the products, okay? And so we're engaged with media, and what it's doing is it's looking at us. And so a lot of times we'll look somewhere on our computer and like let's say it's Facebook or something like that. It will see where our eyes are going, just like in Flickr, Jeffrey Zak's idea of, you know, our flicker rate or something. And then it'll send us an ad or something that corresponds to us, and we'll think, oh, you know, how did it know? It read my mind. So one of the things that happens when I go to colleges and I talk to students, one of the questions I ask them halfway through whatever I am talking about, I say, have you ever noticed that it seems like your phone is reading your mind? And every student's like, yes, how does that happen? So I kind of explain the mechanisms that do that. But Jacques was talking about something way beyond that, way beyond kind of the technical aspects of media doing this and that to you.
What did he mean when he said trust no one?
Right. Yeah.
I don't want to shift gears on you too much, but like I didn't have that in my questions, but now that we're talking about it, it came to me. I thought, oh yeah, he said trust no one to you.
Yes.
What is that supposed to mean? Like, is this because like this whole UFO phenomenon is very trickster devilish of like,
yes.
No one. It blows your mind because you don't know what to believe.
It is very true. So I think, you know, this is what I get from that. And first of all, a lot of things he told me were quite ominous. And in fact, you know, he also would tell me, be careful, Diana, there are some nasty, nasty people, you know, and which for him, you know, he's such a person who carries himself so well, and he's such a gentleman, right? So when he says there are nasty people, you better believe that they're nasty. So what he basically said and what I found out was that I think what happens is that there are a lot of this sounds terrible, but there are a lot of things that are made to look like something, like your friend who went to see the, you know, or Bob Lazar who went to see the alien and such. And Jacques just told me, don't believe anything, because he said if you suspend your belief, you might be able to get a story. You might be able to piece it together. But if you start believing that narrative, which is another reason why we should be a little suspicious of government disclosure, really. You know, what we're going to book, and I put it in religious terms. So Christianity, like, let's take Christianity, for example. It starts out as a fairly awesome type of philosophy, to tell you the truth. A lot of people call Jesus Socrates, right? In the first and second centuries, they were thinking of him as a philosopher. And then what happens is Rome gets a hold, and Rome is a major empire. It gets a hold of Christianity, and it turns it into, you know, it's religion, it's state religion. And then what does it do? It burns all the other books. It burns all the Gnostics. It kills a lot of the Gnostics. It takes their stuff and burns them, right? And makes it a heresy. You know, you can't believe this. And what it does is it creates an official narrative. And that's what I see happening with UFO and ufology. There's an official narrative being created. I wouldn't believe it. No way.
Okay.
Is Project, have you read about Project Bluebeam?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Like, yeah. You know, when the claim directly from Dr. Carol Rosen's mouth, who worked with Dr. Wernher von Braun, she said that on his deathbed, he basically said, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't have it in front of me, but he basically said, don't believe that there's an alien invasion. Don't believe it. They're going to, and it's like, this is a guy who seemed to support the idea of aliens through his work, I would assume.
Yeah.
And he's telling her, don't believe it. And then Jacques Vallée tells you, trust no one. And, and the Project Bluebeam thing, which, you know, it basically more or less is saying they're going to, the powers that be are going to fake an alien invasion for whatever nefarious purpose you want to buy into. Do you see that as a possibility in 2020 or 2025, or what's your take on Project Bluebeam?
You're already, well, gosh, we're in August in 2020, and this is such a crazy year. You know, everybody says it's written by Stephen King. It might as well end with a fake alien invasion, right?
Right.
I guess my point is that I would hope, I am a patriot, I would hope that they wouldn't do that to us. But again, I know what empires do, and I've seen how religions are, and almost all of them get that way. You start with a kind of authentic experience of something otherworldly, right? Whatever it is. And then it becomes narrativized, and then people start believing it without thinking, and I see that going on. And so I was asked to do this, what do I think about disclosure thing for the New York Times? And I don't think they really want me to do that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I'll just say they were supposed to video ourselves and say, what do we think about disclosure? That would be great, you know, things like that. No, I don't believe it is what I say. That would be my statement.
I love it. Okay. I got two more questions and I'm going to let you go because I know we're out of time here. the Collins Elite. Have you heard of this group? It's the idea that there's a Christian inner core, inner secret society inside of, I don't know, the ABCs or the Pentagon or whatever. There's this inner group of folks that are very, very, you know, Christian. And, you know, I don't know if you can talk about that or if you know anything about that. It's something that came up in my research, and I'd be curious if you've got any information on that.
Yeah, I think they definitely exist. Is it Nick Redfern who writes about it?
That's right. He's the one that first talked about it. He talked to a guy named Ray Boucher, I believe his name is. He's a pastor.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So Ray's not going to make it up. So yeah, that source is credible. Is it to the point of, I think what happened, what was told to me was that there were some people that were doing things that they didn't align with their beliefs and their moral beliefs. And so they didn't want to do it. And so I think that then the idea is that a lot of the funding for some of these programs was cut off because of people who believed that these were pretty horrible things, right? Like demons, basically. Mm-hmm. That's the idea.
Yeah, and I think Luis Elizondo came out publicly and even said this. It was on the media that previously they had shut down all these, you know, contact experiments or something because some people, you know, he more or less said some people are believe that, you know, we're going to channel Satan or whatever. And Joe Rogan was talking with George Knapp and Jeremy Corbell just recently on his podcast, and that it came up again. And a lot of people, it just glosses by, but like, you know, when you get deep into this research, I thought, man, he's talking about the Collins Elite. And then, you know, Joe Rogan, which I love Joe Rogan, don't get me wrong. He like kind of mocks and laughs. He's like, ha ha ha. And I'm like, dude, I think, you know, and this is my personal view from reading all this occult literature for so long, is like, I don't think they're wrong. But anyway.
No, I think so. The thing is that when you get, in my field, what you do when you don't have like corroborating evidence, right, like the real thing or whatnot, is you get multiple sources that don't know each other but corroborate the same kind of information. And so then you can't get absolute 100%. You know, but you truth, but you can get, you know, probable. This is probably true, kind of thing. And so, you know, like with Jesus, did Jesus really exist? A lot of people ask me, did Jesus really exist? Well, my goodness, we have all of these sources that say that, he existed, probably. I mean, like 99%. Yeah. Did, you know, can we absolutely, you know, prove it? No. But when you have the Romans talking about him and you have, you know, this group of Jews talking about him and writing about him and, you know, all these other people, and you've got graffiti in Rome and, you know, talking about him. He existed. So I believe that they exist. Absolutely. Do they still exist to the point where they did before? I don't know. You know, do they still exist to the point where they did 10 years ago? Is there a reason for them to believe that these things are like demonic and evil? Yeah. And I'll tell you why, because as many people as have wonderful experiences, contact events, a lot of people get like radiated and, you know, radiation burns or whatnot, you know, and you could go back in history and see, like in Catholic history, and see people that have seen things in the sky and then get burned by them. And could these things be doing these intentionally? I don't think so. I think that that's just part of what they do. And, you know, are we talking about a variety of different types of things? Probably. So, you know, so that it doesn't align with their Christian beliefs makes sense to me, because they, you know, even James says it, you know, and he's a scientist. And in the beginning, you know, as we have the parts and we're going back to the airport from New Mexico, we're going back to Albuquerque airport. He says, you know, Diana, he said, this is very similar to 100 years ago, what people would call demons and angels. So that's why then I decided for American Cosmic 2 that I would go back to John Dee and look at the language of angels and see the history. Because just like you said, Isaac, you have a lineage here, right? There's a lineage of this kind of activity using rituals. A person told me the other day, they don't like that word rituals. And I said, Well, if you think of a ritual like a key that opens a door, you know, then think about it like that, because that's what they are. So people use rituals to do things, to open doors into other portals or places or universes or whatnot. So, you know, these people are using rituals to try to make contact. And they've been doing that, like I said, for thousands of years. So it's nothing new. What is new is that we don't think we do it now. That's what's new.
Okay, this is funny because my last question was to ask you about the ritual magic stuff, and you've answered it. So in a weird synchronistic way, you've answered my you had a precog of my last question. So anyway, we're out of time. I do want you to, you know, can you share with the audience where they can keep up with you? You know, where can they get American Cosmic, and where can we keep up to speed on your John Dee book? I know I'm for sure getting that one the second I can. So if you don't mind, maybe, you know.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So American Cosmic is basically sold in all the versions that are out there, like the audio, which is not me talking, the Kindle and the hardcover, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, you know, any place, a library has it too. And then I have a website called AmericanCosmic.com, and I'm actually going to be changing that up to reflect work on the new book, which I think I'm going to call it American Cosmic 2, The Language of Angels, or something like that, to kind of as a follow-up to suggest that these aren't, you know, because people think of ETs as kind of grays, right? We think of them as grays. They look like us, but they have no lips and that kind of thing. But I'm trying to make people understand that there's a lot more complexity to this. And in fact, it is pretty darn like religion when you look at it, because in religion, you have different kinds of angels and you have different kinds of demons and things like that. And really, you know, when you get more into ufology, even those people, I said this on Twitter once when I was on Twitter, I said that, and it's absolutely true. I couldn't believe how many, if you know about UFOs, you know about the big names in UFOs, right? I'm not going to name names, but some of the people that are the big names in UFOs basically believe that these are demons and angels too. And these are people who are not Christian, you know, or yeah. And that shocked me.
Man, this second book of yours is going to blow a lot of minds.
Yeah, believe me, that shocked me. I mean, it's almost as if I felt like I couldn't be any more shocked. No, there's another shock coming around the corner, right? So, yeah.
When do you think that second book will be available?
I think it takes a while for a book to go into press and get, you know, probably sometime in 2021.
Nice. Okay. Awesome. Well, if I could, I'd love to have you back on to talk about it, you know, after you get the book out and I can read my copy I could pick your brain a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely. Sounds great. Yeah. Awesome. And keep in touch too about your book and everything like that, you know, you're writing.
Yeah. Most definitely. All right. Awesome. Well, I don't want to take any more of your time. I appreciate what you gave us. You're extremely busy. I'll put links to your books, to your website on the show notes. And thanks again for your time. I think your work this is one of the most important books I've ever read. It's always my number one recommendation to people. People ask me what books to read. I always tell them, get this book, because I think you're on the thing.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
Yeah, most definitely. All right. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Well, there you have it. Okay. There you have it. UFOs, aliens. What are they doing here? What are they doing? Are they demonic? I mean, we've all got some more homework to do, but Dr. Pasulka, she's an expert. She's as expert as it gets. She's hanging out with these people. She's picking up pieces of UFOs out of the deserts of New Mexico with these alien nerds in this secret society. If anyone knows the truth, or is close to understanding the truth, it's her. She's friends with Dr. Jacques Vallée, for God's sake. I'm going to put all of her links in the show notes on the website, IlluminatiWatcher.com. You can click those links and check it all out for yourself. Again, you can get her book, American Cosmic, Amazon Audible. And I bought the Amazon Kindle version, and I bought the Audible version. Both highly recommended. I always recommend this book on the top of my list. When people ask me what books to read, I always tell them this. It's right up there with Behold a Pale Horse. It's better than Behold a Pale Horse. I said it. Sorry, Bill Cooper. I love you. But this is her firsthand experience and knowledge and education ties it all together, in my opinion. So check out the links in the show notes, and you won't be disappointed if you read this book. Again, you can get it on Amazon, Audible. It's called American Cosmic. You can check her out on her website, and I'll put all the links in the show notes. Thank you. Please share the show with everyone. If you like the show, drop a review on the iTunes or the Stitcher or the Spreaker or whatever it is you want to listen to the show on. Drop a review, and that helps spread awareness of the show, because I think we all need to understand what's going on with this alien agenda before it's too late. So drop the review, subscribe to the show, and until next time, stay woke.